This podcast brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention.
Hello, everyone. This is Paul Bertarelli reporting from AirVenture 2015 at Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Today is Government Acronym Day, and that's PAFI, which is the Piston Aviation Fuels Initiative. And I'm speaking with Michael Kraft, manager of Lycoming Engines, who's been involved in the certification, or at least from the technical and legal side of new fuels. And Michael, you attended the PAFI update yesterday, and you've been pretty much keeping your thumb on this the whole time. And from what I can understand, just talking to you briefly, you're pretty encouraged about what you can see so far?
Yeah, Paul, the PAFI briefing was the first detailed brief that I had seen since last year's presentation at AirVenture. And what I saw in this briefing was probably more detail on this program, which now looks to be a very, very nicely designed program, along with acknowledgement, you know, from the PAFI level that their mission is the unleaded transition. From what I saw, is it looks like they found a way how they're going to do the unleaded fleet transition in a robust, controlled fashion that's not going to have a lot of paperwork overload on the end users. So it was from an engineer or program manager's perspective on this, it's a very well-designed program. It looks like they've staffed up with the correct leadership in place to make certain that the guidance is there. It is on track. It's on time for the Phase 1 testing that's being currently conducted, and it looks like it's also very much on time for Phase 2, which is the real meat of the engine and the aircraft testing. So I was just very pleased at the presentation materials.
We started out with five submitted candidate fuels. There was one dropout. I believe you said it was BP. So now we're down to four fuels which are going through Phase 1 testing. And Phase 1 testing is largely technical performance, as I understand it.
Yeah, the four fuels in, I think there's a candidate fuel from Shell, one from Total, and two from Swift. And they're going through what I would say is more materials compatibility testing and some test bench type testing with a relatively small volume of fuel. I mean, you're not doing extensive engine testing. What I would say is that each one of these fuels submitted had undergone some basic engine testing to see that the performance was there. And now the materials compatibility stuff, which is really long-term type issues, are really being addressed robustly. They've collected materials from a variety of the major airframers and engine manufacturers. This is a pretty significant program. The subcontracts are in place to do the testing. They've got data rolling in, and once again, very pleased.
From what testing you've seen, we've talked about this before over the past year, you don't really see any technical performance issues with these proposed fuels, at least the ones you're familiar with.
That's correct. There's no technical reason why we can't get this done. The fuels aren't going to be identical to 100LL. But it looks certainly within any reasonable compromise area that we'll be able to achieve as an industry. It's mainly logistics, which is a big deal, and there's a lot of heavy lifting to do on that. But I think the technical piece, there's a very well-designed program on that.
Of course, one concern that most people won't be familiar with, at least most of us users, is that the actual legal fine points of a fleet-wide approval have to be in place. Those probably are in place now in current statutes, but there's a push here on the PAFI side to get something specific from Congress that allows these new fuels to be fleet-wide approval at the stroke of a pen. Is that correct?
Yeah, from what I saw in the PAFI presentation, it looks like they worked out the method to do it. The PAFI members, which is a FAA representative, Gamma, and EAA, were there, and basically they said, we believe that the FAA has the authority to do what they've mapped out, but they're going to look for a statutory clarification, which means they're going to look for congressional clarification that they're going to be able to execute that. It looks like they have figured out the method, which is a big deal, of how you're going to do a fleet-wide approval without having to get an STC for every aircraft that's out there.
And what about timeline? It looks like everything is on track now. There don't seem to be any delays, no potential deal breakers here. Is 2018 still going to be realistic for having this testing done? So at that point, you have one or two, possibly three fuels that have met a new spec. There's a new ASTM spec, and they're basically ready to manufacture. And from where you sit now, it looks like that's doable.
Yes. I mean, they keep They're holding their deadlines and program plans right now on the phase one testing. I have every belief that the program managers, the FAA and industry program manager on this are going to hold the deadline for phase two. And it looks like they are on track for 2018 issuance of ASTM production specifications, as well as I think well on their way to the fleet-wide authorization. I think the industrialization and distribution, that's a different thing, getting to the market. But I think that all the infrastructure looks like it's going to be in place by the 2018 deadline.
And now the $4.59 per gallon question. Any sense of what these fuels are likely to cost?
I think in our area it was $4.43 last week. But I don't know. I think as much as like homing, we're not a fuels distributor expert as much as we look at it. You've got so much cost in the distribution and the quality control chain. I don't know that the cost of the refined product itself is governing this. I think very clearly that any of the folks who have submitted the fuels know they need to be competitive with 100LL. Because why would anybody use it if it wasn't on that front? So, I can't speak on behalf of the companies. If you ask them the question, they're going to say it's going to be competitive with 100LL. And we're not seeing anything in these fuels that is so exotic that that's not going to be the case, particularly when you take a look at there's a lot of distribution and other type costs associated.
Yeah, a lot of it seems to me may hinge on distribution because of the nature of this fuel, lacking lead and the potential manufacturability in a wider geographic range. There are distribution effects there, seems to me, that may impinge on the economics, which would theoretically tend to make it less expensive, possibly.
Yeah, I think, right now, tetraethyl lead is an additive at the refinery. If they figure out how to make the new UL-100, an aviation fuel, at a point downstream of where it is right now, you could be looking at some very different distribution models, and that's cost. That's a very different way of looking at things. Today I think in the U.S. we have, 7 avgas producers, refineries on that. If you go to something that's converted to an aviation fuel further downstream, you've got a lot more people who are producing the constituent chemicals for that. So this is a positive. It can't happen soon enough for the equipment. And I think for the consumer, we're all going to be better off for having the stuff in the pipeline.
Okay, well, thanks very much for the briefing, Michael.
Okay, thank you.
We've been speaking with Michael Kraft, General Manager of Lightcoming Aircraft Engines. This is Paul Bertarelli reporting from AirVenture 2015 at Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Thanks for listening.
This podcast brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention.